Hi, it's another Friday. That means another edition of the Zogby Report, real and unscripted. But this week, we'll talk about this a little later on in the broadcast. This week, we're starting a new look, a new title, and actually a whole new design for the website, which Jeremy will talk about later on. But for now, how are you doing this week, Jer?
You know, I'm thrilled to still be here, 101, and as always, still real and unscripted. We didn't plan episode 101 to be the launch of this new look. It just happened to be that way. So I love the fact that we're still in line with that theme.
And if you're out there listening, reading, or watching, thanks, as always, for your support. So let's, as always, get right into it. No holds barred, okay? So we have to talk about President Biden. It's been a year, and his poll numbers are low. They're averaging now at about 40%. That's his lowest average so far. You've got a few polls, including one out today, that has him again in the 30s. It's not just the overall job performance, but it's the job performance as well on immigration, on inflation, on the economy in general, foreign policy, pretty much across the board, COVID even, record low marks. And that begs the question, and Washington loves to ask these kinds of questions, is the president finished? Is he done? And how bleak are the Democrats' prospects for November in the congressional elections? I'm going to take a stab at my thoughts, and then I certainly want to hear yours. So if we take a look at Joe Biden right now, with the exception of Donald Trump at this point in time, President Biden's approval numbers are the lowest of any president since polls have been taken 1 year into a new administration. He is down. There is no question about it. There is a history of presidents bouncing back, however. Not so much in terms of midterm elections, but we saw with Barack Obama numbers that were very low after a pretty bad end of his first year and a pretty bad 2010, which culminated in the Democrats losing over 60 seats and losing majority in the House of Representatives. And then there was the capture in early May of Osama bin Laden. And we saw the President Obama's numbers go up dramatically. So can never count out, I guess, what scholars would call deus ex machina, you know, some sort of outside force coming in and saving the president. But as things stand right now, these are good numbers, and these could be a drag on Democratic congressional candidates in November. So I would say this, as I look at the panorama of things, that the president, in order to salvage the next year and salvage or at least cut the losses in the congressional elections, needs a deus ex machina. One would come from inflation, something that a president doesn't have much control over, but right now we're at about a 7% annual rate of increase on inflation, highest, the worst in about 40 years. There has to be some significant progress made on reducing inflation. And then secondly, he has to get his arms around, and there has to be much less confusion and a whole lot more progress on COVID-19. Those are the two things I think that can save him. His agency in both of those is limited, you know, in terms of what he can do. But there are things he can do vis-a-vis opening up supply chains, vis-a-vis maybe as more data is collected on the various strands of COVID, that perhaps some sort of clarity in policy that can take place. But for now, prospects are pretty bleak for the Democrats. I have more to say, but let me hear what you're thinking.
Yeah, I think you're right. The prospects are pretty bleak. And it was helpful that you mentioned it's not the tendency for presidents to have bounce backs when they go that low, but it can happen. I think the most recent example we could look to would be George W. Bush. I think when he entered office, he was probably below 50% approval, high 40s. And then, of course, 9/11 happened, and it shot up to about 90% approval. The difference here is that Biden started with the crisis, and it's only gone downhill. You know it's a big problem when the major polling outfits like Quinnipiac are showing 33%. You know, usually you would expect to see that from Trafalgar or Rasmussen, who tend to be heavier on, we could say, in favor of, you know, Republican numbers. So that's a major problem. And another factor driving this, as far as I see, is that, you know, part of the election cycle is keeping the hype up. And mm-hmm. every election cycle, Americans, in one way or another, start to get hyped again, start to get excited. And it's quite a rolling spectacle of an event. And we definitely saw that going into 2020 with the backdrop of this is the Armageddon election. Democrats, you got to get behind your guy. Republicans, you got to get behind your guy. But no sooner than later, Biden gets into office. And on the Democratic side, the hype slowly withers, or actually pretty surely, not slowly, quickly and surely withers away. And why is that? What's the reason behind that? It's probably more complex than what I'm going to say, but I'll look to two things. I think Biden and the Democrats put all of their eggs in a couple of baskets, one being Build Back Better, and the other being addressing what they call voter suppression through the Voting Rights Act. I think those probably have been the two hallmark pieces of legislation that they put their eggs in, and it's not looking good. Build Back Better, as we know, is gone for now. And I don't see it coming back with a fury as we get into 2022. The problem, stepping back and being objective and looking at the notion of voter suppression and the Voting Rights Act, I think the Democrats are going to have a big problem with independents. And that I think independents are going to start to see more and more the reality that, what are you talking about voter suppression? Trending from 2016 to 2020, you had 20 plus more million Americans go to the polls. There's no voter suppression. There's only been a trend upward of the public, by and large, going back the last four or five presidential elections, voting more and more, with a couple exceptions. I think 2012 had a little bit of a dip compared to Barack's first presidential campaign. So this is pretty problematic for the Democrats that they're hanging on these two big pieces of legislation that they can't really sell independence on. And you talked about the specter of inflation, and there was actually a poll that came out late last week or earlier this week showing that I think for the first time, Americans' biggest concern is no longer COVID-19, but it's inflation. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with you're seeing, whether it's from the CDC, whether it's from Anthony Fauci, whether it's the WHO, whether it's top scientists, you're now starting to see the tide turn on the COVID narrative. Whether it's when the WHO announced a week ago that healthy children don't need to be boosted, whether it's when Fauci was on MSNBC and admitted that a lot of cases with COVID are basically due to false positive tests, that people are going into the emergency room for example, these were his own words, with a broken leg and testing positive for COVID. So in other words, a lot of Americans are going into the hospital with COVID, not because of COVID. And so with all of this going on, it doesn't spell well for Biden.
All right, so a couple of points of clarification on what you just said. The first is regarding voter suppression. It is the real efforts to limit opportunities to vote for Black voters in 19 states that is a reaction to the increased Black turnouts over the last decade and over the last 5 years. So, you know, it's very important that we get the chronology correct on that one. Secondly, problem with COVID, the many problems with COVID, it is very real. But I think the thing that we're talking about here for Americans is confusion. I know in my own instance, I will click on, I will get a news alert from one of the networks or the Times saying turning the corner on Omicron, there are fewer cases, fewer deaths, and then clicking on Drudge and seeing a headline projected 50 to 300,000 more deaths between now and the spring. That's what the CDC says. Record numbers of folks in the hospitals. Very hard for the average citizen to really understand what's going on, let alone for an administration to make policy. The biggest problem is we're collecting data in real time and unfortunately analyzing that data in real time. And it's something like this, you need longitudinal data. You need to let it play out a little more fully before you understand what longer range implications are. But with that said, the burden is still going to be on the Republicans to do two things. Number one, to decide what is Donald Trump to my candidacy? What is Donald Trump to my future? And can I win this district with him, without him, both or neither? That's the first question. The second question, as always, is what do they stand for? Is it enough to be against Biden's agenda and to link Biden with socialism and critical race theory and all of that? Will that ultimately play out? But I think my final point here is the rational voter. What have you done for me lately? What would you do for me next? What is the memory of Republican control? Were things better under Donald Trump? Were things better with a Republican majority? What is the agenda? So that's why a year to go, less than a year to go, not looking good for the Democrats, but Republicans have a burden of proof.
Yeah, and then my rebuttal to just a couple things would be going back to voter suppression is, of course, you saw the poll that came out that 72% of Black voters support or have no problem with voter ID. This is in Michigan. Of course, Michigan is a battleground state. So, you know, we throw these ideas around and I think people often forget, well, hey, what do African Americans think about it? We know what the DNC and what the party elite think about it, but we also know that what the party elite and the DNC often think is not in touch with the public, hence what happened in Virginia. But remember, 72% of Black voters in the state of Michigan, a swing state themselves, have no problem with showing up with an ID. On the COVID confusion and the mixed messages of different headlines, I think it's starting to become clear. The United Kingdom under Boris Johnson scrapped vaccine passports, COVID passports and other mandates and said, we're done, just like that overnight. Same thing with Israel. You know, Israel was the testing ground for the green passport. I think they were the first nation to really, you know, drill that on the population, and they're abandoning it. The top immunologist out of Israel has now said, the top immunologist, not you know, just some doctor, has said the whole response during the whole pandemic has been a failure, whether it was vaccines, whether it was mandates, whatever, it's all been a failure. And the CDC, lo and behold, comes out and says that cloth masks don't work. So, I mean, one by one, what were the pillars of the pandemic narrative, the COVID narrative, appear to be falling. And so, yes, there is confusion, but you look at the fact that what upheld, you know, the COVID narrative over the last years is quickly being chipped away. And again, you tie that back to Biden. What's he going to do? Can he follow suit and do what Boris Johnson did and say, well, we have to stop this talk of vaccine mandates? Although in the U.S., it wasn't probably as harsh as it was in other countries.
Let's just agree that there is an awful lot of confusion, and it's no one has the ideal solution for COVID and its variants just yet. And that's a problem. It's a problem for the guy at the top. Yeah. Regarding voter suppression, I was going to give you the last word, but look, we have 19 states that have passed some form of limitation. Republicans would call it the traditional rules of the game. Democrats and blacks would say that that it's an active effort to suppress the black vote. You used Michigan as an example. Remember, we're talking about Georgia, talking about North Carolina, and we're talking about Texas even as a swing state where the black vote really can matter and swing an election. And I think what's vital is let's take that 72%, which is a good figure, that don't have a problem with it. 28% do, apparently, either have a problem with it or are not sure. And that's the sort of thing that's more than enough to either reduce the black vote or suppress the black vote. Let's move on. Are we going to war with Russia?
Well, I'm sorry. I actually don't want to move on. we will address this, but
all right.
There's just a
fun try. Bad try, though. What was it?
No, I there's still a question that I think we need to ask. Okay, so in the grand scheme of things, going back the last four or five presidential elections, in general, voter turnout is up. It's way up. Okay. Just in the last cycle alone, 20 plus more million voters go to the polls. Is that only for white people? And even if you go to individual states, is it down for African Americans? Is that because that you know, Republicans in those states are creating barriers and making it difficult? I guess I think we really need, and this is a pitch here, we really need to do a nationwide poll of African Americans and find out, are you okay with presenting your a state ID in order to go to the polls? I would be shocked to find that most African Americans would have a problem with that.
Let's postpone the Russia talk, okay, until another time. This is too good. Again, the law, state laws that we're talking about are in response to 2020. Now, that in itself is a very important consideration. And you cannot help but conclude that Republicans want to limit black turnout because the black vote is overwhelmingly Democrat. On the other hand, Democrats are not necessarily out of the woods, because we are seeing among black voters a slight, not a huge or tumultuous, but a slight erosion of support for the Democrats. That and Latinos as well. So that could be problematic in a whole other way. That what happens is that the voters that get caught in the net, not able to pass the regulations, the registrations, the enhanced convenience of voting, those could be Democratic supporters, where it's the more conservative, let's say maybe even the more affluent among Blacks who've been switching over, voting either more independent or voting Republican. So I am willing to suggest that I think both parties now are having their own kind of problem with Black voters. Republicans worried because of the growing numbers of votes, which you cite. Democrats worrying that, hey, where's this erosion coming from? We're normally able to count on 90, 92, Barack Obama, 95% of the Black vote, and that's not happening anymore.
I guess I would just say that Republicans on a good election need about 14% to do well and to get very close. They need about 15% might 15% from the Black vote might put them over the edge. Why would they do anything to compromise that? If the idea is we pass this legislation to and it's strategically to limit the Black vote, why would they shoot themselves in the foot? And so
I think poll is warranted. I do.
Yeah, and so I think what Republicans are getting at when they talk about this kind of legislation, I think more or less their concern is the prospect or the phenomenon or the potential of illegals being able to vote in elections. I think that's what they're getting at, and not so much we want to hold back African Americans because they need 14% to perform well. I don't think they would want to jeopardize that.
All right, so now we will skip Russia. Let me just say, we're not going to go to war with Russia. I'd be very surprised. But with that said, let's talk very briefly in the time remaining about the new look. And you've got some exciting new data without necessarily releasing the numbers. What are folks going to see on Monday in the missive?
So first off, we are going to launch our new look of our website today, still johnzogbystrategies.com. We're celebrating our fifth year as John Zogby Strategies. So we thought we could use a new look. So we love our website and we love the work Ryan Miller has helped us with. And I thought it would be good to send out another press release for some data that we have. And I've got these questions on the future. I mean, we're always looking to the future. We're always looking about where are we going. And right now, the public has a tendency to focus on the economics and the politics, and it's hard not to. But what about the future of humanity? Here we are, and we are literally at the prospect of biotechnology that we've never seen the likes of. We could only read about in sci-fi novels. There's all this talk of the metaverse and virtual reality and spending more and more of our time in the virtual, in the VR world. And so I have some questions, and I guess I can just spill what the headline is going to be. The headline is going to be human versus human 2.0, which does the decade belong to? And ultimately, I wanted to know what the public thought about two predictions that were made, one by Elon Musk, that as early as this year, you'll start to see microchip implants into the human brain, as well as Klaus Schwab, who is the head of the World Economic Forum, wrote the book, The Fourth Industrial Revolution, in which he talks about the lines being blurred between what is physical, what is digital, and what is artificial intelligence. In other words, humans merging with AI. Will there be a rift in our human species? This would be the first time, probably going back, I don't know, 50,000 years, when at some point Cro-Magnon, the theory goes, mated with Neanderthal or killed off the Neanderthal. But I wanted to look to the future and see where the public stands. And I'm going to hold everybody in suspense for that press release that's going to go out on Monday.
Okay, that sounds pretty exciting. Okay, well, another one under our belts. Everybody have a good week. Enjoy this podcast and look for you on Monday when you see the whole new look and some exciting data. Have a good week.
Take care.